From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. We have a lot to discuss today. This hour, we're going to be joined by Rich Lowry in a matter of moments. We're covering what is going on right now at the United Nations. Yesterday, of course, the president of Iran had a chance to speak. People are upset about it. But when you have the United Nations here, you have to let everybody in. I don't know what you Iran is obviously not a desired leader. You don't see Vladimir Putin on anyone's guest list. But they, if you're going to have the United Nations here, you got to have enemy nations. Sadly, that's just the way it is. A lot of people don't think we should have the United Nations here, especially they've been less effective each and every year. But you have 140 world leaders. One thing is for certain, it's impossible to get anywhere here in New York. So before we get to Rich, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Kamala Harris just held a rally in Madison, Wisconsin, and I am told by a whistleblower with direct knowledge of the situation that Secret Service says that Trump should not and could not have a rally in Wisconsin because Secret Service could not protect him and adequately staff it.
That is a weird leak, but that is what a whistleblower told Josh Hawley. Assassination investigation. Details come out of the House investigation, and it's indeed worse than anyone thought. What we still need to know, and is Trump safe now, with Iran continuing to promise his execution?
Number two.
As much as I love the job, I love my country more. I decided after 50 years of public service, it's time for a new generation of leadership. Some things are more important than staying in power.
Really? You said if it took God Almighty to pull you out. You said, I'm not going anywhere. You had 2 weeks to rally everybody. And then when you realize you're losing all support of your party, then you stepped aside. The world may be duped, Mr. President, but I'm not. Biden addresses the UN and cites his foreign policy success. Where is the success? What is the reality? He set the world on fire along with Harris. Friends and foes know it. We look at their record.
Number one.
I've been very clear. I think we should eliminate the filibuster for Roe and get us to the point where 51 votes would be what we need to actually put back in law the protections for reproductive freedom.
There is Kamala Harris, is at least staying consistent on that. 2024, Harris and Trump on flat-footed tie right now. Two national polls says 1 point difference. One says Trump's up, the other says Harris is up. But I think Harris's momentum is being blunted right now as she heads to the border on Friday. I'm not too sure that's a great move. One thing I'm pretty positive at, it doesn't work to her benefit to bring up the fact that she's going to get rid of another norm in government, and that is the filibuster. Right away, Joe Manchin and Senator Sinema said, I am no longer supporting her. Now, you might say, well, who cares? I think it matters a lot because they represent a moderate middle, people that don't like the extremes, worry about her, and then they come out and say, if she does that, it'll turn into head-snapping changes in American society depending on who gets elected. I'm pretty sure that wasn't the intention. Rich Lowry joins us now, editor of National Review. Rich, you think that was a mistake for her to tell the truth?
Well, it's the position she'd already staked out. Not that stopped her on anything else, but she had staked this out fairly recently, and I guess she just figures there's nothing she can say related to abortion that goes too far. But the problem with this is they also say Schumer says they're going to eliminate it for their so-called voting rights bill. But if you eliminate the legislative filibuster for two things, you're not stopping there. Like every other interest group's going to say, how about our thing? And the temptation will just be do everything they want so that you could get so-called court reform, a court packing, if they eliminate the filibuster. You could get Puerto Rico or D.C. as states to at least talk about it. So this is a radical thing, and the Trump campaign has to try to make her pay a price.
I would think so, because, number one, if we already saw with the courts. Remember, Harry Reid said, this is just for judges, just for district judges. And the Republicans came in and go, no, it'll be for Supreme Court justices, too. And so it is expanded, and now you have a simple majority for no filibuster when it comes to these judges. All right. Now, when it comes to legislation, as soon as Republican gets in, maybe they'll put an abortion ban in place if they have 51 votes in the House. Okay, there you go. Then it'll be totally reversed. I'm pretty sure the American people don't want that. Right now, though, when you talk about a compromise, The compromise is trying to get all Democrats or all Republicans to vote. Mm-hmm. It's almost been useless to reach across the aisle.
Yeah, well, the filibuster, not in its current form, but in some form, has really existed since there's been a U.S. Senate. So this would be a radical change, and it does force you to make the case for something over time and build a larger consensus for it. And that's a good thing. That's the kind of thing the founders wanted. They didn't want us to be a pure democracy that's just yin-yanging back and forth. Unfortunately, we have a lot of that now because just presidents will do things on their own power. Environmental policy and climate policy just changes radically with Congress never passing legislation just based on who's elected or not. So I think this would be a bad thing. And you know, Sinema and Manchin, they're serious about this. They realize the institutional implications, the implications for the country, which is why you'd say, why would they react so sternly to a proposed procedural change in the Senate? But they know what the consequences of it would be.
Absolutely. So President of the United States, we're talking to Rich Lowry, the former President of the United States is getting specific about things he'd like to do with the economy. Here's a little. Cut 10.
The centerpiece of my plan is for a manufacturing renaissance, which will be a 15% made in America tax rate. In other words, if you make your product in America, so the tax rate was practically close to 50%. Some people would say 38, but when you added it all up, some companies are paying much more with state and local, much more than 50%. But I got it down to 21% through Congress. Can you believe we got it through Congress? A lot of people say it was the greatest thing we did.
So he has some elaborate proposals. If you want to leave the country, like, for example, John Deere wants to build in Mexico. He's going to charge a 200% tariff. He's also going to heavily tariff everything coming into China. And he wants to heavily recruit companies to come here to bring back our manufacturing base. How does this sit with free market Republicans?
Not well. I think Trump's won the argument about China and whether we should have tariffs on China. And all you need to know, and this was an effective point he made in the debate with Harris, is the Biden administration kept those tariffs. So those are a matter of bipartisan consensus. But the problem with the broader tariffs, you know, it sounds good. It's the polling I've seen, it's popular among Republicans. But all these companies in the U.S. rely on foreign imports, inputs, you know, so you're making it harder for certain manufacturers. You know, you might be making it easier for U.S. Steel concerns, but everyone who uses steel, including foreign steel, it's more expensive and harder for them to make their products, and they're manufacturing stuff and they're U.S. companies. So as broad and encompassing as he's talking about it, I don't think it makes sense.
Right. He wants to do something radical to get manufacturing back here that's been hollowed out since the 80s. Even if it means prices going up, the theory is the middle class wages will go up and it will bring back a productive middle class. Here's more. Cut 11.
We're cutting the business tax from 21% to 15%, which makes us the most competitive tax anywhere on the planet. But only for those who make their product in the USA. See, that's an incentive. So we already cut it to 21%, and it was the 21%, that big cut, it was the 21 plus the regulatory cuts that gave us the greatest economy in our history. It was the greatest economy in the history of our country. And now what we're doing is taking it one step further.
So the Pat Buchanan talked about this for the first time. Let's bring back manufacturing to our country. It resonated, not enough to get him the nomination. Your thoughts now?
Yeah, so we'll see. The free marketeers who are close to Trump kind of think this will be used as a cudgel for negotiations.
Yeah.
And there's an article someone ran, it might have been the Journal a week or two ago, how actually foreign countries who want trade deals with us, they want Trump, not Harris, because they think it'll be a lot of wheeling dealing with Trump. And one idea he's talked about, not as much as, you know, just 10, 15, 20%, whatever it's been, is the idea of reciprocity, which is we'll go to the tariff level that the foreign country has on us. And that obviously creates an incentive for the foreign country to come down. And you might not end up with a 10, 15, or 20% tariff. You might end up with a 0% tariff if they go to zero, which would be a good thing. But I was with Brian, a high-level official, former Trump official, who's telling a story to a group the other day about BMW and these foreign car manufacturers, and Trump wanted them to open plants in the U.S. And these couple Trump officials said to the CEOs, come have breakfast with us. And they're like, why? You know, we're busy guys. We're running car companies. Well, you know, do you want tariffs on all your products a week or two from now? You know, 25% tariffs, whatever. Okay, we're coming to breakfast. They end up going to the White House with Trump. You know, Trump ends up, you know, bullying them and charming them the only way he can, and gets these commitments to build more here. So I think you'll see a lot of that as well. And for me, that's healthier than across the board tariffs. But the threat of the tariffs might be necessary to make it happen.
So I want you to – Joe Biden yesterday gave a speech talking about basically how great his foreign policy is. And I really believe it's the biggest disaster in my lifetime. The whole world is on fire. Europe's on fire. The Taiwan Strait has never been more dangerous. And you look at the Middle East, look at what's happening. Israel is doing their best to take out the world's premier terror organization, which on its face seems great, but it's certainly risky. And while taking out Hamas in Gaza, while dealing with local unrest, and Iran waiting for them to retaliate for the taking out of Hania. So your thoughts about his foreign policy?
Well, I think at the root of it is opposing what they always call escalation, whether it's the Ukrainians fighting back against the Russians, whether it's Israel fighting back against these terror groups, whether it's us retaliating against proxy groups hitting us with their rockets or what the Houthis have been doing. So there's no sense that actually you hitting back harder increases your deterrence and maybe will reduce the conflict and de-escalate the conflict. So that's what Israel – I don't know whether it's going to work, but that's certainly what Israel's trying to do with Hezbollah and this brilliant campaign. I mean, this last week has just been extraordinary to disrupt their communications, to take out all these mid-level operators and then hit them at a time when they can't really hit back and take out as many of these weapons as launchers that it can. It's just been extraordinary. And it may be that things settle down in the north of Israel after this, after Israel has reestablished its deterrence. But that idea of strength, of making your enemies fear you, is something Biden personally, his administration, have zero understanding of, and Trump does.
Israel has reestablished themselves as a power to be feared. I mean, what they have done, I systematically taken out the leadership of Hezbollah while taking out some of their weapon sites. And there's a theory out there that in those pages with GPS, because they seem to know exactly where everyone is and where the missile sites were, they might have been tracking them for a few years. So
it's been brilliant. It's like nothing we've ever seen. And also, it was kind of a lab test, Brian, to if Israel could carry out the most precise mass attack on terrorists ever and still get accused of war crimes. And the answer is yes. So, you know, they bomb, they're guilty of war crimes. They go in on the ground, they're guilty of war crimes. They carry out the most precise attack you can possibly imagine in the real world, also accused of war crimes. So it all comes down to the Jewish state can't defend itself. That's what the left maintains, basically.
Right. Where do you think this election's at, Rich?
It's tied. I don't have any great insights, Brian. It's just tied. You know, she's a little bit ahead nationally, but that's consistent with a tie in the swing states. You know, encouraging numbers in the Sun Belt for Trump the other day with the New York Times polls, but you have some other polls that showed a little differently. So it's just as close as it gets, and we're going to be down to a 2016-2020 coin flip type result again.
So last week was a challenging week for you, right?
It was. It got a little cancellation brigade came after me based on I misspoke on the Megyn Kelly show. Ill-intentioned people made it out like I said a racial slur. Honest people on the center left, even some hardcore progressives, that can't stand me or anything I said, understood it was just misspeaking. But I still got canceled by a couple places. So it just goes. I thought we'd gotten past this at least a little bit since 2020, but we haven't.
Yeah, but don't worry, you're never going to be canceled here, Rich Lowry. It's a good thing you're editor
I have
of your
to
own.
Really mess up to get canceled from the Kill Me Show. But yeah. I really appreciate that, Brian.
Rich Lowry, absolutely. Rich Lowry, editor of the National Review. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll take some calls in just a moment, and then we'll open up a little bit more about some of the things we were discussing, one of which was the President of the United States has a total misperception of how he's perceived and how the not only the why he is leaving his job, but also what went into him leaving Afghanistan. And his view of reality or his spin is embarrassing. I'll explain. But how his latest proclamation could be trouble for Harris. I'll explain that too.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you think she needs to be presenting more meat on the bones of, I get that she's from a middle-class family, it's great, and I get that she feels people's pains, great, but what about, like, here are the five things I'm going to do directly for you. Does she need to be doing more of that?
Well, she'll be doing some of that tomorrow once she'll put forth her economic plan. But people like to have a connection to whoever is running for office, that they share their experience, that they understand their lives. And I think that's what she is establishing. But I do think that the one issue in terms of the cost of living, people want to hear something very specific.
Right. And she said, I'm not one to give political advice. She goes on to say, really? You, Nancy Pelosi, the one who kicked Joe Biden to the curb? And in case you think it's just Brian Kilmeade's perception, it is Joe Biden's perception. They haven't spoken since. She totally abandoned him. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe that's the way politics works. Friendship doesn't matter, especially in Washington. He was going to lose. But here's the thing. He was always failing. He was always incapable of doing the job. She had to have known it, but it only mattered when he failed in front of the world during the debate. And one of the many things that Kamala Harris, the vice president, has not been called out on is how she played into the cover-up of his failings. How many times do you think in reality she walked into a meeting with him and he had that vacant look in his eye like he was just searching for some type of his brain to work again? Just like he froze up so many times in front of the camera. Yesterday was an embarrassing speech. I don't even want to talk about it. But I think it's important because it relates to who will be the next president if Kamala Harris wins and what she'll do. I assume exact same thing that Joe Biden's doing. You know what he talked about yesterday? All his major push to greening our economy, doing more than anybody else. And you know what? You probably did. Al Gore talked about it. Barack Obama talked about it. You did it. And guess what? It was against our will, and it was against free market principles. You still are telling people we're going to be windmills and solar panels, but you don't let anyone mind. You're saying, look at California. California has it right. California is going to be ready and getting ready gas cars at 2035 and stop selling them in 2030. You know who doesn't want to do that? The dealerships who sell cars. You know who's not able to sell cars? The dealerships. Because you forced them in Massachusetts, in Illinois, in California to do all this stuff, and they're not selling. They're losing their shirt.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Examine the contemporary history of the region. Iran has never initiated a war. It has only defended itself heroically against external aggression, causing the aggressors to regret their actions. Iran has never occupied the territory of any nation. It has not sought the resources of any country. It has repeatedly offered various proposals to its neighbors and international fora aimed at establishing lasting peace and stability.
That was Iran's new president through a translator saying, it's Iran's not the problem. We don't initiate wars. We just finance all the proxy groups, Islamic Jihad, the militias throughout Iraq, Hezbollah and Hamas, and make sure they make Iran do all they can to make Israel's life miserable, culminating almost a year ago, October 7th, in one of the worst massacres since the Holocaust on the Jewish people. And since that time, Israel's been on a war footing. And since October 8th, Hezbollah has been sending rockets in. And last night, it was a missile into Tel Aviv, which they knocked out of the sky. But with the takedown of Hezbollah fighters, as well as their higher-ups, has been astounding. It's been unbelievably effective. And could a ground war be next? I am not sure, but a guy that would know a lot better than me is a guy in the eye of the storm. He's editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post, Zvika Klein. Zvika, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks for giving us some time.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping this topic on the radar.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the takedown of these Hezbollah higher-ups. Nasrallah stands, but just about everyone close to him is dead. How have they done it?
You know, I mean, it's funny because years ago, I was one of those Israelis that thought that we, as a country, invest too much money in security and defense and ammunition, you know, whatever, and maybe we should invest more in education. And I think I was wrong, you know. And I feel, you know, many Israelis kind of feel that finally not only the experience, but the technology that Israel has been developing and creating for so many years is actually being implemented. But it really is a joint collaboration of all these agencies, whether it's the Mossad, the Shin Bet, the IDF, and many other, you know, parts of the Israeli defense system and ecosystem that are working on this all together.
So you write the first story in the Jerusalem Post right now. The IDF Northern Command Major General on Wednesday told his forces that we need to be ready to go into action and invade Lebanon. Speaking to Brigade 7, he emphasized their actions must change the security reality for Israel's 60,000 northern residents who have been evacuated because their safety couldn't be guaranteed. So life is not okay day to day because of Hezbollah.
For 11 months. For 11 months, yeah. I mean, it's crazy, you know.
So
for 11 months.
Do you think a ground invasion is truly possible?
These people just are living. So, I mean, just in the past few hours, it was published that the IDF has drafted two large groups of IDF reserve units that are supposed to, both tanks, et cetera, but also kind of on ground combat. So that's definitely something which is a scenario and a very possible scenario. And obviously, as time goes by, it becomes more realistic.
Does it have popular support in Jerusalem, in Israel?
That's a great question. I haven't seen recent surveys, but I would say yes. Many Israelis kind of, even though I would never celebrate people being killed, but, you know, the fact that, you know, all these recent attacks, whether it, you know, claimed to be Israel with the pagers and whatever, and all these, you know, Air Force attacks, you know, it causes Israelis to have a bit more of pride and in support of their army. So definitely there are a lot of people that want this to happen, and also many people who live up north or who have relatives or who just care are saying, you know, people are not going to go back if it's not combat. It's just the same way as the Gaza border communities. You know, people are like, we're not – and these are actually people who are, you know, are liberals, progressives, who are saying we're not moving back until Gaza is, like, in flames and Gaza's just – torn down because we are not going to risk our lives again.
Right. Ibrahim Kobisi was one killed yesterday. He was accused of coordinating the missile attacks targeting northern Israel. He was taken out. I'm astounded on your intelligence and the way you were able to take him out in an apartment building. They say the complex was blown up while he was hit. 15 others were injured, according to their Ministry of Health, Lebanon's Ministry of Health, some of which are also officers in the Hezbollah's military.
You know, Brian, what drives me crazy is the fact that, and we've written about this, is no matter what Israel does, and you were saying how astounded you were, and basically maybe I'll explain what you were saying, is basically that the or, you know, whatever, had this, you know, had this intelligence and knew exactly where the person was, because I think we're probably one of the only armies in the world that were, like, you know, keep on speaking up and sending out messages to the civilians and saying, you know, leave this area. And definitely if you have ammunition in your home that, you know, Hezbollah is hiding there or you're hiding it there or whatever, like, leave because we are attacking and doing anything possible to only harm those that are part of a terror organization. Because, you know, obviously it's just very easy to drop a really big bomb on a civilian area or any area. But, like, we really, you know, the IDF really does not want to harm civilians, you know, and make it just about, not about Lebanon, but about, you know, Hezbollah. But we don't get any sort of, like, recognition of that. So I feel like it's too complicated of a messaging, or people are just not open to understand that situation, that really, you know, that really, well, making any sort of effort to save lives.
No doubt about it. It would help if the U.S. gave more words of support and talked about your objectives. And now every time a civilian dies unnecessarily, or a civilian dies in the line of fire, it's a tragedy. With Hamas, it's a victory. That's a huge difference. So I want you to hear more from the translated words of the president yesterday at the United Nations, president, the new president of Iran. Cut 25.
It is imperative that the international community should immediately stop the violence and bring about a permanent ceasefire in Gaza and bring an end to the desperate barbarism of Israel in Lebanon before it engulfs the region and the world. Israel has been defeated in Gaza, and no amount of barbaric violence can restore its myth of invincibility. Naturally, blind Israeli state terrorism over the past few days in Lebanon, followed by a massive aggression with thousands of victims, cannot go unanswered.
So that's interesting. You guys lost in Gaza, and
you're living in a parallel universe, right? I think he's living in like a parallel universe there.
Yeah, I mean, which is reality. Gaza's been destroyed. Most of Hamas is dead. Where is the Gaza operation right now? And is the consensus that you do need to guard the border between Egypt and Gaza with some type of Israeli presence?
100%. I think, you know, there's pretty much an understanding that there needs to be some sort of presence there because of the amount of ammunition and fatal equipment that was snuck in or brought in, broad daylight, whatever, through the border from Egypt. You know, that's something that Israelis cannot allow or ignore, because that would just create another October 7th. And obviously we will be stronger and smarter, et cetera. But we don't want to get to that situation again. We don't want to get to that situation where our security and the lives of our children and wives and, you know, civilians are at risk just because they live in a certain area, which is, you know, legally an Israeli area recognized by the world. So that's something that a lot of Israelis do, you know, feel strongly about. Obviously, there are those that are willing to give that up even temporarily in order to return the hostages. I respect that. That situation, and I don't know what I would do if anyone I was related to was kidnapped, but they definitely want to do anything they can. So there's still 101 hostages in Gaza, most of them civilians.
So Netanyahu's going to be coming to the United Nations to give a speech, I think, tomorrow. He's leaving later because of this operation. So for the American public, I think 2 weeks ago we were talking about the six hostages who are executed because the IDF was closing in on them, pressure on Netanyahu. Has their pressure lessened because of this Hezbollah operation, which has been so brilliant?
1,000%, yes. Whether you agree with it or not, I mean, the focus is very much still on the North. The hostages have become kind of like a lesser issue within, you know, public discourse and even in the media. Those who are, you know, who are demonstrating and fighting, you know, for the release of the hostages are kind of, you know, they have to make extra effort to get that attention. whether that's intentional or not, you know, I have no idea, but definitely kind of moved it a bit aside. And obviously, when you have success, then there's more support within the country. So, you know, there is more of a support, but, you know, Netanyahu is still not, I wouldn't say he's the most popular Israeli at the moment.
We're speaking with the editor of the Jerusalem Post, Zviki Klein, from Israel, about the series of attacks in the north, the public comments of the president of Iran. Is there pressure on Iran to act from their terrorist organizations because Hezbollah is getting pounded, because Hamas is getting pounded, because you've done a good job on the Houthi rebels who've done too good a job shutting down the Red Sea? Is there pressure? Are the father of all these organizations getting pressure from their satellites to push back directly on you guys?
Again, I mean, we're seeing reports that yes, you know, I mean, because you know, I just you know saw a report that around 1,500 Hezbollah members haven't been able to be part of the military action because of just because of the pager attack. So this is without the you know the exact you know shootings and missiles from airplanes, etc. To kill a few more hundred people. And same with the Houthis, etc. So like you know they've definitely been harmed and they are you know looking for this support from Iran. I know there's lots of pressure from the U.S. and other countries to you know, have Iran not involved and engage in a larger regional, you know, conflict. But, you know, whether that will influence them or not is really up to them. And when you hear, you know, you hear, you know, what we heard from the UN, it's just very, you know, it's very disconnected. I think it's interesting how, you know, progressive Americans were, you know, going out to the streets or campuses and demonstrating against Israel, you know, are they aligning themselves with the Iranian leaders? Because I think they probably have, like, except for when it comes to Israel, I think 99% of anything else they just don't agree with them on. But, you know, that's their perspective right on things.
What do your sources say, Zvika, about what Hamas is, what's left of Hamas in Gaza?
Right, so it's still unclear whether Sinwar, the head of Hamas, was killed or not. There were reports about that a few days ago. Whether it's like a tactic, a psychological tactic, to cause members of Hamas to be, you know, worried or anxious. You know, there definitely has been silence from his direction and from his surroundings. And I think kind of the pagers in Lebanon kind of prove that it would be very difficult. And many, you know, security forces that, you know, senior officials that I speak to are saying, you know, what, you know, whether even before there were reports of him being killed, you know, he's not able to actually manage his terror organization, but they have very clear kind of instructions. Just like, you know, you mentioned the six hostages being killed at gunpoint when they heard or saw the IDF getting close. So there are these specific rules, but the understanding was it wasn't that Sinwar ordered them to do so. It was actually just kind of like a, you know, a last second kind of announcement that they, you know, they received, you know, in their training or months before that that's what they do in this type of situation.
I hear you. It's a perilous time over in Israel, but you're able to cover it all and give America a perspective on what's really happening. Zvika Klein, editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian, so much. And I'm waiting to host you here in Jerusalem. We hope we could make it happen.
That would be great. I'd love it. See everything firsthand. I've never seen a military operation sustain itself like you guys have done for a full year with seven enemies taking aim, and you guys have survived. It's amazing and thrived. Thanks so much.
I know our time's up. I just want to say that you kind of give me hope when I speak to you, so thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You have a lot of support here, certainly on this show. Zvika, thank you. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
New York City officials actually said drivers should expect the slowest traffic of the year. Now, you know traffic is slow when even Biden is like, no, I'm just going to get out and walk. Yeah, earlier today, President Biden attended the General Assembly and delivered his final UN address. Biden called on nations to band together amid world conflicts and growing concerns over China's influence. Then he added, or do whatever you want. What the hell do I care? I don't know.
Right. That's pretty funny, right? Would they ever made that comment if he was in a neck and neck race with Trump?
Maybe. Yeah, probably not.
Did you see him walk into the building, into the plaza yesterday? And for the Bloomberg event?
He had a bit of a shuffle, right?
Oh, he looks, I mean, I would feel bad. He looks like he's 100. Because I've seen, I guess he's 81. Seen 81-year-olds. We see it nonstop. I mean, a lot of those leaders are 81 years old, in their 80s. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, he's aging. He can't do the job. Why was he even considering it? But this is where I think he hurt Harris yesterday. He won over with Bloomberg to impress Mike Bloomberg. He won over everything he's done with his green agenda. Do you know what's retroactive right now? Radioactive, talking about your green agenda. The American people don't want to hear it because look at the cost to taxpayers of his green agenda. $1.6 trillion in green energy and tax breaks. $1.4 billion for nationwide network for EV chargers. We got eight. $1.2 trillion cost of Inflation Reduction Act. See, remember they told us going to reduce inflation? He laughed and said it was really about green energy. $196 billion estimated cost of EV battery production credits. 54% increase from the original. $101 billion in EV tax credits. So he's bragging about all this. You know who took it as a body blow? Harris. The EV initiatives that she was a part of. 2019, co-sponsored the Zero Emissions Vehicle Act. 2020, 100% of new car sales are EV by 2035, she signed off on. She ran on that. Announced electric car vehicle charging systems, clean transportation. $370 billion invested in solar, wind, and electric vehicles. This is all our money. It's not her money. And she's proud of that. Now, if you are environmentalist, she was going to vote. You're going to get her vote anyway. If you're a moderate undecided and you're concerned about our economy, inflation coming down in the future of oil and gas, this is what she thinks. And this is what Biden thinks she should talk about.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. We just saw President Zelensky speak at the UN, on the floor of the UN at the General Assembly, talking about what they're fighting brilliantly and hard, but they think the Russians are looking to take down their energy structure, and they have reports that they're looking to bomb out their nuclear power plant. Can you imagine that? All of Europe's going to be affected. That's what I'm talking about. You can pretend that, well, I don't even know where the Ukraine is. I don't know any Ukrainians. Maybe Russia's got a point. Is anyone here sober enough to understand that when a country invades another country unprovoked and wants to carve everyone up, take them all hostage, put their leader in charge, and say historically, dating back 250 years, this country belongs to us, that that's not okay? The last time Napoleon tried that, didn't work out. You know who else tried that? Hitler tried that, didn't work out. We swore it would never happen again. And now there's some people in this country who believes we should just let it happen. I don't. General Jack Keane standing by. I'm going to get his opinion on the state of that war, as well as the astounding turns of events in the Middle East. Matt Walsh has got a great movie out. It's number 4 in the country. Am I a Racist? It just mocks this whole political correctness. But before we go any further, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Kamala Harris just held a rally in Madison, Wisconsin, and I am told by a whistleblower with direct knowledge of the situation that Secret Service says that Trump should not and could not have a rally in Wisconsin because Secret Service could not protect him and adequately staff it.
That's stunning. That's Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri. Assassination investigation. Details come out of the House investigation, the Senate investigation. It's indeed worse than anyone thought. What we still need to know, and is Trump safe now with Iran bragging that they still want him assassinated?
Number two.
As much as I love the job, I love my country more. I decided after 50 years of public service, It's time for a new generation of leadership. Some things are more important than staying in power.
Right. Believe me, he wants to stay in power. They didn't let him. They took all his power away. Biden addresses the UN and cites his foreign policy success. I don't see it. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
I've been very clear. I think we should eliminate the filibuster for Roe and get us to the point where we 51 votes would be what we need to actually put back in law the protections for reproductive freedom.
And with that, you lose a lot of moderate votes, including some prominent senators like Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin, no longer endorsing Kamala Harris, who will blow up normalcy and an institution in the Senate if she, in fact, wins, gets the Senate, and does just that, including packing the court. Well, first things first, the world is here, 140 leaders at least, prime ministers and monarchs. They all want to give their moment, to have their moment to talk about the world as they see it from their perspective. General Jack Keane joins us now, chairman of the Institute for the Study of War. General, what do you think Zelensky wanted to accomplish here today? This is the diplomatic side of his brain.
Well, I think he wants everybody to understand that this war is not stalemated, and they're fighting for their life here, and they've got a lot of fight left in them. And certainly the Operation Cursed, invading Russia, first time since World War II, is evidence of that. The tough defense that they're putting up in the Donbass region, Russia is incurring tens of thousands of casualties there, a significant loss of equipment as well, which is pushing Putin, you know, to another mobilization that he doesn't want to do because he doesn't want domestic pushback. So this war is not over. It is protracted unnecessarily because the Biden administration have given the Ukrainians too little too late to prosecute the war, and I'm convinced in his session with the president, which I believe is tomorrow, he's going to make a case to them about why he needs to be able to use the U.S. weapons the Biden administration has given to him and fire into Russia. I spoke to President Zelensky Sunday night one-on-one, and I spoke to his foreign minister one-on-one on that very issue, and I told them this. I said, the Institute for the Biden administration is giving you a reason for that, the primary reason that the Russian forces have all pulled back their forces outside the range of the weapons that are restricted. And I told President Zelensky and the foreign minister that is a falsehood, and it's just it is a false excuse. I said the real reason is they fear Russian escalation, which has been the reason why they slowed the weapons to you and never gave you enough. I told them that I've given a map from the Institute to Study of War. Your people have it. Your ambassador here in Washington has it. And it identifies 245 Russian forces and bases that are within range of the long-range missiles that we're restricting them, and 16 of them are air bases from which the devastating attacks are coming on their people and their energy infrastructure. And that is the truth of it. I said, Mr. President, the argument is on your side. You have the truth. You have the facts. Press the case hard. I hope he does. I think he will.
Is it one person he has to convince, General Keane? Is it just Biden being bullheaded like in Afghanistan, or are there people around him telling him these things that you got to keep restrictions on or nuclear war's next?
It's two people. Jake Sullivan is a primary factor here. Blinken, who wanted to stay in Afghanistan, Sullivan, who wanted out, Biden really made the decision. On the weapons restriction, the president made the decision. He's personally engaged in it. I talked to a very high-level person in the State Department, and when I put the map in front of him, he said, my God, Jack, he said, this is information that is different than what's being used around here. And I said, well, we have geolocated this. I said, the Institute for the Study of War stands by these 245 Russian force concentrations. We are convinced we've got this right, and you guys are minimizing this, and it's just dead wrong. His response, he said, well, I got it. I'm going to work it. But this is a decision the president made, and it's and he's involved in it. And so that's your answer there. The president makes far more decisions than people think he does. Because of his cognitive issues, people are thinking he's not involved in the decision-making process. He is involved in the decision-making process much more than people think.
I especially when I think it comes to this war in particular. So what's changed now that they have the F-16s?
Well, they don't have enough of them yet. You know, they're just getting them, and they don't have enough pilots. What they'll use them for primarily, Brian, is air defense. That's what they need them for, because they've got the anti-air missiles that can deal with the SU-34s and SU-35s that are delivering the glide bombs that have been so devastating that, you know, President Zelensky was talking about in his speech in terms of the energy infrastructure being being hit. So, yeah, that's what they need them for.
Right.
And right now there are four retired American F-16 pilots in Ukraine, and they'll be transitioning to those F-16s themselves. And they believe they're going to be able to get about two dozen or so to do
right.
that, and possibly some other pilots from other countries. Now, these are pilots there. Some of them will be instructor pilots. They got combat experience, and they really will be able to help the Ukrainians inside their fighting F-16 squadrons, you know, to help them with how best to take advantage of the aircraft.
Amazing what's going on. So they've taken a 500 square miles in Kursk, and the hope was that the Russians would have to recommit troops in that area and pull them off the front lines. They haven't had to do that. Instead, they want to call up 180,000 more reserves. Are they going to get them?
Well,
they were calling out prisoners 2 years ago, weren't they?
Yeah, the Russians have real challenges, you know, because Putin, remember, he thought this thing would be over in 2 to 3 weeks. That was his mindset.
So did we, right? Didn't our people think that?
So did we, yeah. So here, but he's thinking about his people. So here we have a protracted war, and that the people weren't expecting that. He had to mobilize forces to do it, young people to do it. He didn't take them out of the western part of Russia, which is more educated, socioeconomic differences as well. He went to the central part of Russia and the foremost eastern part of Russia to mobilize them and actually force people as conscripts into the military. Casualties are significant. He'll likely go back to that source again to do it. And what he's very concerned about is that as the war is protracted, pushback, and certainly the Ukrainians achieved a psychological victory also in the Kursk operation, because that was blasted all over Russian state television. It had to be, because it was so significant. And, you know, certainly the people are questioning and saying, well, what's going on? I thought this was going to be easy. And now they're inside our territory, and they forced somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 to 100 settlements of people to move out of that area, you know, because the Ukrainians were occupying it. Yeah, so he has – I'm not saying that the pressure is overwhelming and it's going to force Putin to do something different, but the pressure is mounting. And the longer this war goes and the challenges he has in terms of casualties, that's going to increase.
I worry that President Trump doesn't realize it, because he's got a lot of people on his extreme right who think that there's an military industrial complex who makes money off this. And if anything, our military industrial complex has shrunken to the point where we can't even, you know, we can't arm ourselves, let alone our allies. How do you disabuse people of that? I think I'm actually in the minority on many for many people who see not politics in this, a necessity to stop Russia. How do you see this mounting on the right, not from Lindsey Graham's, but from others?
Well, I think Look, when the president sits down and starts to get classified briefings on this, he hasn't taken classified briefings. I know that for a fact because I asked him, and he hasn't at a time when I was talking to him about this issue. So here's what I think. I mean, when he gets into all the information that he needs, a number of things will change in terms of what the facts are. The facts are that the Europeans have given significantly to support this war. And the information he has is that they're not. You know, that the United States is overwhelmingly providing their support is just not true. Not only that, but it's the Europeans who recognized early on that Putin's threat of nuclear weapons was just an information campaign to reduce the support. It was a bluff. And they forced the tanks on the United States. They forced the long-range missiles on the United States because the Europeans see it for what it is. And they forced the F-16s on the United States. So when he gets the facts of this, that's one fact. The other fact of it is what an investment this is. This is not throwing money away. This is an investment in the defense industrial base because the money goes to build new weapons for the United States. We give them what's in our warehouses in terms of weapons. Some of those are older, and we get the newer version of that weapon. Gotcha. As a result of the money spent. We also provide financial and humanitarian support to the Ukrainians. And you put all that together. If we can stop the Russians here, then we're going to take the Russians' ambitions off the board for a number of years in terms of wanting to move into the Eastern Europe, and even though that those are NATO countries. And he gets that classified briefing on what Putin's intentions are. That will also have some impact on him in terms of where Putin really is. So I think, look, and I'm not being Pollyannish about this, Brian. I share your concern. There are a lot of people who are giving him information that are not accurate. But I do know from my own interaction with him when he was president, he listens very well. He asks very good questions. And he's coachable in terms of changing his position if he has new information.
So I want to bring you to what's happening with Israel now. The Jerusalem Post is writing that the IDF has briefed certain brigades that there could be a land invasion into Lebanon. How would you characterize what they've done so far? What have they actually done to hurt Hezbollah substantially? And would it be wise, from what you know, to go in on the ground if you actually want to get those people back in their homes in northern Israel?
Yeah, so I think what's going on, Brian, that's a great question. I mean, I think where Prime Minister Netanyahu and his war cabinet are is they don't want to go into Lebanon on the ground, but they may have to. And what they have decided to do is really step up their game. Nasrallah, who is the head of Hezbollah, he's the decision maker influenced by the Iranians. And they're trying to get inside of his head and convince him what he's really up against. This is not 2006. When the Israelis went in on the ground and conducted a campaign as a result of Hezbollah killing a number of IDF soldiers and capturing three of them. That was 37 days, and the Israelis did not accomplish the mission. They took far more casualties than they thought.
Gotcha.
And all their service chiefs were relieved. 18 years later, the Israelis have exquisite intelligence, considerably more military capacity. Right. They know it'll be a challenge. And what they're doing right now, by the walkie-talkie pager explosions, the killing of Hezbollah leaders in Beirut, taking down Rodwan, the elite organization of special ops forces, the 1,600 sorties the other day, that's all designed to tell Nasrallah, pull back and voluntarily pull back, or we're going to have to force you back.
General Jack
Keane, also preparing for a ground invasion.
It's amazing what's going on. General Jack Keane, thanks so much. Invaluable information. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, went a little long with General Jack Keane, but you're talking about a guy that, speaking to Trump, talking to the administration, and talking to General to President Zelensky. I think it's pretty. I think it's pretty invaluable to get as much information as possible. Coming up next, we're going to take a break from politics, take a break from what's happening in war. Matt Walsh, he wrote, you know, of course, he hosts the Matt Walsh Show, but he actually came up and did this reality show in the theme of what is a woman. He says, am I racist? And he's just mocking the political correctness out there today in a way, goes undisguised to a degree, not like Borat did. And just by letting them speak, understand the stupidity which is among us. And hopefully how far we've come since the crazy days and the George Floyd stuff and everything around the Black Lives Matter movement. Brian Kilmeade Show, so glad you're here.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Let's be clear what's happening in this country. It's Nazism. Republicans are Nazis. You cannot separate yourselves from the bad white people.
Growing up in the 90s, I never thought much about race. Sure, you noticed, but never really seemed to matter that much. At least not to me.
Being a white, straight, cisgender man is the top of the pile.
I'm on the top of the pile.
That's me. Am I racist?
I would really appreciate it if you left.
I'm trying to learn. I'm on this journey.
Can you please leave?
What is racism?
Martin Luther King said not to judge people by the...
Martin Luther King said a lot of stuff.
Is America inherently racist?
What the hell is that?
The word inherent is challenging there. America is racist to its bones. All of the...
So inherently.
Yeah.
The entire system has to burn. And I'm not going to even use save this country. This country is not worth saving. This country is a piece of shit.
Right. That is some of the sentiment we've seen over the last few years, and it's driving us crazy. I've talked about it a lot when we talk about the war on history. And guess what? Matt Walsh did a movie about it. He hosts the Matt Walsh Show, but his new movie is out. It's now 7, was as high as 4 in the country. Am I a racist? And Matt, in the beginning, goes out as Matt Walsh, and then he realizes he has to go a little bit undercover, not like Borat undercover, but a little bit undercover, and go find out how racist we actually are. Matt, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade. Well, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, Matt, first, what prompted the idea to go out and do this?
Well, it was, we made a movie called What is a Woman about gender ideology. It came out a few years ago. And, you know, after that film, we knew we wanted to explore another kind of cultural topic through making a film. It was my first time making a film with What is a Woman. And it seemed like race is the other kind of obviously big area of controversy in the culture. And what's driving a lot of that controversy is the DEI, is the so-called anti-racist people, these hustlers, I would call them. And so we decided we wanted to make a movie exploring that specifically, these people and how they are driving this problem in America.
Right. So you wanted to go at first. Did you legitimately think that you were not well known enough to be Matt Walsh and go out into these woke circles and not be noticed? Or was that intentional to show a metamorphosis?
Well, we wanted to show the metamorphosis, but also we did want to show that these people live in really a bubble. So you might think that, well, look, I'll say on my side of it, as a conservative, I'm pretty well aware of the kind of liberal media personalities out there. They probably wouldn't be able to do to me what I did to some of them, because even though I don't watch their stuff, I'm aware of them because I want to know what they're talking about. There doesn't appear to be as much awareness on the other side because they're really in this bubble. And for some of the people we talked to in the film, Robin DiAngelo being one of them, author of White Fragility, you know, kind of the godmother of this anti-racism stuff. I think for her, when she was sitting in the room with me, even though she didn't really know who I was, it was probably the first time that she'd been in a room with someone that doesn't already agree with her about everything. It's probably the first time in years that that's happened to her. Right. And so for her, it was like probably unthinkable that she would ever be in a room with someone who would in any way challenge her or try to expose her views.
Here's a little of that interaction.
Hi, Robin.
Hi. And what's your name?
I'm Matt.
Matt. Hi, yeah. Matt.
Nice to meet you.
I just had to ask who you are because you have to be careful.
Never be too careful.
Right. What does she mean she wants to be careful? You had to be careful.
Well, she needs to be careful, but then she wasn't, of course. But it is interesting that the fact that she said that to begin with, like, what do you need to be careful about? I mean, if you
believe
if
what you believe
are confident.
Yeah.
Right. If you believe what you believe, if you're confident in what you believe, then there's really no secrets. All I'm doing is asking you what you believe. And so there's, you know, there's no reason to be nervous. But it is funny that she was nervous. And yet at the same time, she still sat there. Actually, it was a 2-hour exchange between the two of us in real time. And she sat for the whole thing, I have to say.
Matt, did she know who you were and that you were conservative and that you wanted to bat around her opinions?
No, she didn't know that. She didn't know that. Well, everybody in the film, we told them that we're making a documentary about anti-racism, which we were. You know, that is what we were doing. Now, they might have assumed that that our opinion on anti-racism is you know, in favor of it.
Right.
But, you know, that's what you get for making assumptions, I guess.
So you called up and you got her on because you just say, hey, I'm doing a movie about anti-racism. Is that how you got in this right. circle of the therapy circle? And then when you realized you had to go semi under disguise, and not to give away the whole movie, but one thing you did is get people to weigh in on, can we change the George Washington Monument to the George Floyd Monument? As you know, George Floyd died tragically, but he was, if you look at his resume, he's a horrific American who's tortured women and raped. And, you know, you would think, okay, I have some standards, but people were willing to do it.
They were. And that was probably one of the most surprising things for me making the movie is I thought that, well, yeah, we could probably go to D.C. and get people to agree to a petition to take George Washington's name off the monument. Unfortunately, that's probably pretty easy to do. But I thought this suggestion to turn into the George Floyd Monument is just, it's so ridiculous that most people would know that it's a joke. Or if they thought it wasn't a joke, they would be offended by it.
Right.
But that wasn't our experience. Actually, we had trouble finding people who wouldn't sign it. We had to extend the shoot for longer than we wanted to because we wanted to get at least somebody on camera not signing it.
Isn't that depressing?
Everybody that we, it's very depressing. Yeah, I mean, it's very depressing. And I think it speaks to, you know, there's the ideological indoctrination that a lot of people have fallen into. But then also, more than that, it's the way that people cave to social pressure, even like pretty light social pressure, which is what I was putting on them to sign the petition. I wasn't forcing them or compelling them to do it, but it's like a little bit of social pressure. And I think people are very susceptible to that, which is one thing we discovered while making the film. And then these race hustlers, they take advantage of that. They take advantage of how easy it is, frankly, to manipulate a lot of people because people don't, you know, people are not, they don't like confrontation. They want to be polite. They want to be friendly. And that's a generally positive instinct, I think, even if it's not one that I often share.
If you're a white guy, or a white person, you're guilty. You feel guilty.
Exactly. There's that deep-seated guilt that they instill in people based on nothing. Like, you didn't do anything wrong. Slavery was a horrible thing. We haven't had slavery for 150 years. There's no reason why anyone alive today should feel personally bad about it, like as if you did it. But this is what they do. And you know, guilt is also a powerful weapon that you can use to manipulate people. And that's another thing that we see, you know, you see come up in the film quite a bit.
All right. I want you to talk about, first, we're going to play a clip, the Moana problem. Do you want to tell me anything about that before we hear it?
Yeah, well, you'll see it in the clip, but the Moana problem is, well, you know what it is? It's the lose-lose scenario that the DEI people create, where if you do what they say, you're racist, but if you do the opposite, you're also racist. No matter what, you end up being racist. And this applies not just to adults, but to children as well, apparently.
Listen to this.
My daughter's 4 years old. I am an anti-racist educator, quote unquote. She's still watching Disney movies, and she is choosing a white princess over princesses of color.
Have you talked to her about that?
All the time.
My 3-year-old daughter is very, her favorite princess is Moana.
Love it.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
But then I also thought, you know, there's a little bit of cultural appropriation here. She wants to be Moana for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we navigate that? Do I go and buy the Pacific Islander native attire for my white 3-year-old?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
But I guess what we might call the Moana problem here is what on one hand, there's cultural appropriation. On the other hand, there's gravitating towards white characters.
Right.
So it's almost like no matter which way you go, you end up back in racism.
We think every space belongs to us because we live in a white supremacist society.
Is America an inherently racist country?
I think the word inherent is challenging there. If we say...
Fundamentally.
Fundamentally, yes. America is racist to its bones. All of the...
So inherently.
Yeah.
America's racist to its bones. And it's just people are making money off this school of thought.
They are. And, you know, there's a couple of interesting things you see in that clip. And one, of course, is how this trickles all the way down to children. And, of course, in the movie, you laugh at it because it's absurd. And laughing at absurdity makes sense. But it's also pretty horrific because, you know, I might be joking in that scene, but she isn't. And she's talking about how she, you know, imposes this on her own four-year-old. In fact, in that conversation, I even ask her, it's not in the clip, but I ask her, when's the best time to start talking to your kids about their racism? And she says, before they can talk. So when they're babies, at infancy, start telling your child that he's racist. I mean, this is what she actually believes and tells people to do, and people listen to her.
Matt Walsh talking about his movie that's out now and still can go. You go to the theater. It is a great escape and also a reality check. So, Matt, your takeaway from we have trouble identifying what is a woman. You won and went to town on that. Was extremely successful. Your takeaway now. I'm starting to feel, and I think I was talking to you in the Gutfeld green room, about I think we're beginning to turn the corner. We're starting to sober up. The pandemic's over. The George Floyd riots, the crying on TV because you're not a black sportscaster, instead you're a white sportscaster. All that stuff is, I feel as though we're coming out of it. Do I have a reason for this hope?
I think you have a reason for it. I mean, I think we're the kind of general cultural insanity that we've been living in for so long. I think it's not going to go away overnight, and so the fight continues in a lot of ways. But I do think that the same, you know, team sanity, as I've come to call it, because that's really, you talk about right and left, it's really become just it's the sane people versus the not sane people. And team sanity has had some real wins in the last couple of years, and some of it's legislative and political, but a lot of it is it is just cultural. Like, people are fed up with a lot of this nonsense. And there was a kind of nonsense that I think the average American maybe tended to go along with because of this instinct that I talked about earlier to be polite and nice and you don't want to be confrontational. But I think that is going away. And a lot of it is, it's just kind of an exhaustion. People are tired of all of this and they're sick of it. And now they're finally speaking up, I think.
I do. I absolutely think so. I also think, I just think that after a while, people realize need to travel and see how great the country is. It's a shame that these people are taught to hate the country so much. We're on stolen land and we're a fundamentally or inherently racist society. Look, no one denied segregation was terrible, that Jim Crow was awful. The Civil War was fought for a reason. One of the main reason was slavery, to get rid of slavery. Everybody, you can learn American history and still love the country because you see where we're at right now. In many ways, do you think an All in the Family rolled out like that with different actors mocking racism, which it was, can roll out today? Do you think we can roll that out in 2025 and people wouldn't be outraged?
I don't know if we've made it that far yet. I don't know if we've reclaimed sanity quite to that point. And part of the problem is that we still have the cultural institutions. I mean, the average American is one thing, but we still have the cultural institutions that are still owned entirely by the left and are still pushing this stuff. And they have a lot of power to do that. And so the next step is to we got to reclaim these institutions that, I mean, these people that we're exposing in the film, these are college professors, academics, you know, these are people that are in powerful positions in institutions that shape the culture. And so the next step is very much to reclaim those institutions, I think.
Matt Walsh, congratulations on the movie. Keep it going. It's still in theaters. Where do we find it?
Yeah, it's in theaters. You can get it. Go to a theater near you. Go to amiracist.com and get your tickets today.
Go get it, Matt. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
All right, here we go. Let's find out if there's more to know. UNLV quarterback Matt Sloka quits his team after three games, even though he's 3-0, because he said the school has broken their promises. I don't know if this is money or not. He says if we reach a new point in college football when the starting quarterback of an undefeated team decides to leave and have and preserve his red shirt status, which means he can play next year and not count this year, by not playing, he can go to maybe a bigger school with more money. He said, I committed to UNLV based on certain representations that were made to me, which were not upheld. Despite our discussions, I became clear that these commitments would not be fulfilled in the future. I wish my teammates the best. I'm done. He transferred from Holy Cross. Was the catalyst the team needed? Was it because of the NIL? Name, image, and likeness. Was he promised a big deal? Didn't get the money. This is the beginning of a new era in college football, right?
It is, and then are we going to find out that other schools have been now, like, reaching out to him on the sly saying, hey, we're going to give you even more.
If you don't play one more game and lose your eligibility.
Yep.
Next. Guess what? P. Diddy Combs in jail right next to Sam Bankman-Fried of SBF. The pair, which also live with other inmates, is in a special housing unit that often holds high-profile inmates. SBF sentenced to 25 years in prison, asked to stay at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn while he appeals his fraud conviction. Combs is awaiting trial after pleading not guilty to sex trafficking charges. And this guy, they're both in a lot of trouble. But I'll tell you, I'm surprised because I heard this place is hellacious. Why would he want to stay there? I heard it's one of the worst prisons.
But, I mean, it does say they're in, like, a special housing unit for high-profile inmates, so it might be hellacious, but it sounds like maybe theirs is a little less awful.
My sense is he thought for sure he'd get out on bail.
Yeah.
And he is now going to be stuck there waiting trial, and the trial looks brutal, even though currently he has money to pay for these high-profile lawyers. Next, rent controls don't work. Argentinian president has proven that. That country he took over got rid of rent controls, and guess what? Rents went down 40% in the real estate of rental properties, adjusted for inflation, while monthly price increases have reached their lowest level. He is becoming a rock star. He is a big Trumper, too.
He actually is a fascinating guy. Like, he sort of goes against the grain. He's going to do what he believes in. He doesn't care. And then the people are actually really appreciating it in Argentina.
Yeah, I know. He does not have the greatest hair. Would you agree with that?
I actually wouldn't be able to point him out. I just listened to a podcast he did, and he sounded
interesting. You should definitely look at his hair.
Promise because that's what makes a good president, is the hair.
I would think so.
Which is then, do you or do you not vote for Trump because of hair?
Right. L.A. Times, now this story. Let's talk a little sports. Caitlin Clark, again, in the headlines. She got a finger jammed into her eye and has got a black eye. This was Sun guard Dejani Carrington did it and was bragging about it. It was caused by a player who mocked her out over in June. Said, if I worked at the LA Times, I'd be calling, emailing about the people who wrote and approved that headline. If those people aren't willing to put their names behind it, accusing Carrington of intentionally poking Clark in the eye, it's because they know it's flat out wrong. So the original headline said she was poked in the eye intentionally. The second one says she just has a black eye. It says the LA Times caved. The outlet quickly massaged the headline to Caitlin Clark suffers a black eye instead of being targeted. Carrington's inflammatory rhetoric is part of the story. She's accused Clark of white privilege, calling Fever fans the nastiest, and belittled white Americans. By the way, she can play. She gets even better after the All-Star break, taking those 2 weeks off, coming straight off a college season. She was reinvigorated. She is doing the classiest thing, I think, Allison, is she never gets involved in these petty squabbles. Racism, white privilege, poked in the eye, knocked to the ground, fouled too much, does not get involved.
Yeah, she keeps it to how well the team is doing and wants to play better. Or yes, I agree. She
sooner or later they realize that she's helping the whole league. I'm not sure when. Hey, don't forget, I want to see you October 20th in Peekskill, New York. History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour on stage, VIP opportunities before. Just go to briankilmeade.com. It's better than you can imagine.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show from Midtown Manhattan, or around the country, around the world. This hour, we're going to be joined by Martha McCallum at some point. Andrea DiMatteo is here right now, played, one of the stars of The Sopranos, played Adriana there, and relaunching her apparel line, Ultra Free. and has weighed in on various things in the news media and pushing back against what is going on in this country with this cultural appropriateness in many ways. And before we get to Dre, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Kamala Harris just held a rally in Madison, Wisconsin, and I am told by a whistleblower with direct knowledge of the situation that Secret Service says that Trump should not and could not have a rally in Wisconsin because Secret Service could not protect him and adequately staff it.
Assassination investigation details come out of the House investigation, and it's indeed worse than anybody thought about the Secret Service. And guess what? Iran still wants to pull it off, and Trump was just briefed, and the threat is more than real.
Number two.
As much as I love the job, I love my country more. I decided after 50 years of public service, it's time for a new generation of leadership. Some things are more important than staying in power.
Right. And that's the quote that Nancy Pelosi read to him as she told him to leave. No one believes he left on his own. No one believes he could do the job. And no one believes his foreign policy was a success. Worst ever in our lifetime. But Joe can believe what Joe wants to believe.
Number one.
I've been very clear. I think we should eliminate the filibuster for Roe and get us to the point where 51 votes would be what we need to actually put back in law the protections for reproductive freedom.
There you go. She makes a stand, and it's to blow up the filibuster in another institution, which means packing the court, adding two states, is just around the corner if she wins and gets the Senate. Not okay with Joe Manchin, not okay with Senator Sinema, not okay with many others out there. We'll see where this goes. Meanwhile, Harris is going to be speaking at the border on Friday. I can almost anticipate her stance. With us right now is someone who's always worried about the border, worried about our country, has a lot on her mind, embroiled in Hollywood, lives in Los Angeles, but is really happy in this studio. Dre, is that correct?
Yes, I'm very happy to be in the studio, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Queens and Manhattan.
Where in Queens?
Whitestone, under the Whitestone Bridge, Malba, a little mafia neighborhood.
Oh, is it really? Was it legitimately in that mafia neighborhood?
I kind of think it might have been.
Right.
It's different now.
So I don't know if I'm bragging a little bit. I got the award for like Italian of the Year by this Italian organization. It's going to be in 2 weeks and in New Jersey. And the first thing you think of, can I go? But it does check out. I mean, does because you did The Sopranos, you're always thinking that something's mob related?
I mean, I didn't know.
With Italians in New York?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I hear that you have a slight accent and I didn't really know. Are you Italian?
I'm half Italian, half Irish.
I'm half Italian, half Irish. Like, I hear it now. I didn't hear it last time I did your show.
Wow.
I didn't know that I had slight ties to the mafia when I was on The Sopranos. And
right.
Now that everybody in my family is gone, I know the truth about certain things.
And what? Anything you want to share?
I mean, my grandfather, I knew about him, Joe Babes. He was a made guy.
Right. Originally, it started because Italians couldn't get jobs. They had to band together in order to make opportunities for each other, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Look, man, if you go back, way back to Italy and the way all of that was working, it kind of would dictate what's happening in our government right now. So
we would not have the problem with illegal immigrants in New York City. Right now, we actually have Venezuelan gangs fighting New York gangs, and same thing in Chicago, and it's going to take place everywhere. So how did this happen?
I think that the goal is to weaken the country, to overload it so that they can get themselves onto some type of socialist regime. It seems obvious what's happening here.
Was there one moment that broke it for you where you thought, okay, I've had enough?
All of the crime is, I live in California. We know what's happening there. And then once all of these states that are, all of the places that are experiencing heavy crime, once it gets cold, they're all going to end up in California. They
right.
can't go to Florida, so they're going to come to us. It just feels very orchestrated and organized. This doesn't feel like the days when I was a kid and the city was dangerous and it was going through a transition. This feels systematically organized by the powers that be. And you know America doesn't have our backs. The government.
So do you feel as though Trump would be a better choice this year?
I mean, in terms of that,
the Queens guy, the Queens connection.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to be mad about it. I don't know why people are so mad when you hear "Make America Great Again." I mean, I think that, you know, freedom has become a four-letter word all over this country, all over the world, really. You know, I think once they can break us, they can break the rest of the world. And it's happening globally right now. The whole UN pact for the future that's happening at this time. I mean, people are so focused on this supposed Trump agenda 2025, which isn't even his. And no one is paying attention to Agenda 2030. Which I think most Americans need to really research what that actually means for our sovereignty.
And what does that mean?
I mean, they can call – basically, they took the WHO pandemic treaty, which could not get passed because of the Republicans, and they hid it into this UN summit for the future. And from climate to any kind of global shock, they can declare a world emergency. And take everyone's sovereignty. It's a one world government.
But you know what's interesting is I think there's pushback because, you know, the green agenda that Joe Biden ran on and was so proud of and then he rolled out. Kamala Harris is afraid to even bring it up now because the majority of the public are not even they're not buying the EVs. Ford is dropping out. GM's dropping out. They're not buying the higher when it comes to people paying higher utility bills and gas bills. Do you think that people are sobering up out of this? That the agenda didn't work?
I think the agenda, which is all it is, an agenda, will still be there if she gets in office, and she won't talk about it until she gets in office, and then once she's in there, it will be completely, you know, followed through. I don't trust. Everything's been inverted. I think we're clear on that. Everything they say on the left right now is actually not happening. So everything that liberals used to vote for what's happening on the right.
Right.
And none of my fellow liberals, and I still consider myself a liberal, they're voting for the most I don't understand it. It's really out of control what's going on right now.
How has it affected your career and the jobs you got and get?
I took a vow just to stay out of it for now, stay out of Hollywood. I'm appalled by my industry, by this display of actors supporting war, endorsing candidates this year around. It used to be fun and it felt like, I think before the American public really understood what was happening in the world, it used to be fun to see a celebrity endorse, you know, Bill Clinton and all those times. Yeah. And now that we know the truth, that it was all just a continuation of the Bush administration, it's not fun. And now you have celebrities aligned with the Bush administration, with Cheney and Goldman Sachs. Like, these aren't great endorsements for her. Like, everyone is acting like, oh, my God, we're moving over to her.
What did you think of the Oprah interview?
I didn't really watch a lot. To me, it's so... It's just, I'm over it.
Orchestrated.
Man. It's theater.
But then you see Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro and all these celebrities saying, you're getting me so excited, the feeling of joy. Do you feel joy?
I feel like she's picking up catchphrases from the Nazis and from Maoists, and I don't think that I trust a thing that's happening on that side.
Although I don't think Mao wrote a book called Joy. I don't think.
No, but The Great Leap Forward and her motto's forward.
That is true. We're not going back. We're not going back. Is that a thing?
Turn the page. Come on now.
So tell me about what is Ultra Free?
Ultra Free is our brand. My boyfriend and I, Robbie, we're both, you know, I'm an actor. He's a musician. We feel like the arts are on hold right now. There's no political movement towards anything that means anything. People are quiet. People are afraid right now. Usually in a time like this, art is thriving. You know, the hippie movement in the 60s, people rallying anti-war. Right now, the left is for war, which makes no sense to me, and the right is against it. So Ultra Free is sort of we're hippies for humanity. People think that it's, you know, some right-wing thing, and I'm like, absolutely not, because we're liberals.
Clothing?
Yes, ultrafree.co, clothing. It's all t-shirts that have like some fun political sayings on them, know what team you're on, kind of stuff, even though we all need to be together right now. But yeah, and we have jewelry and t-shirts.
Like, you have a rifle around your neck.
I do, because I think right now we need to protect our minds, protect our hearts. It's more symbolic of just overall protection of freedom of speech, You know, the wars need to stop, all of this insane stuff that has been going on the last 4 years.
Right. Do you find that if you spoke your mind like that amongst your friends, maybe in Los Angeles, that you would lose a lot of the room?
I already have. But I also know that most of this country is awake. And they are. But the media has been captured by, you know, you guys are the last, you know, you guys are the last ones left. You guys are the last ones left getting the closest to the truth. So.
So I was with some people over the weekend. They like live and breathe the movie industry. Nobody's shooting in America. They're all shooting overseas. They can't deal with the unions. They can't deal with the regulations. They can't deal with the DEI. They have to leave the country, even though they started it necessarily with the whole political correctness and being above it all. They can't control it, so they just leave. They can't be anti-union, but they're not using any unions.
Yeah, it's I really feel like the film industry and the music industry are on hold. I feel like the American dream's on hold right now. I feel like we're in another dimension.
Well, I mean, what was your big break?
Sopranos.
So the big break is Sopranos. You feel as though if there's something like that coming around the bend today, you feel as though the scripts would be so politically correct it wouldn't work?
That show would never get made today. But, you know, he says that he made that show as a sort of an expose on the decline of American civilization. And that was right before 9/11. Look at us now.
Very changed.
Yeah.
Who's David Chase?
David Chase, yeah.
And his... His reaction to what's happening today, is he producing anything out now?
I don't know what he's working on a lot of projects, actually.
He did the Boardwalk series, too, didn't he?
No, he didn't do that. That was some of the writers and directors from the show did that one. But David, I think he was involved with the Many Saints of Newark.
Right.
But I don't know what he's working on right now.
Do you feel a connection to that cast still?
Yes, I do. We were a family, man. That was a very different experience. After I did that, I didn't really care if I ever did anything else in this industry again.
Drea, the other thing is almost everyone I met on the cast, I didn't meet Gal Dafini, but the rest were way to the right. I mean, a lot
Italians.
Of them.
Italians are conservatives.
I think so.
You know? But a lot of them are to the left. But this right now is not about left or right. This is a humanitarian issue. Like, we're losing sovereignty. We're losing the republic. And that's what's most important. I think people need to put aside all their ideologies, all their social issues, and really look at the stone cold hard fact about what's happening right now.
And what do you think? Do you think that we're like, for example, this movie, Am I a Racist, had a today talked to Matt. He put it together. It kind of mocks the racial appropriateness that was dominating after George Floyd. You see that people are moving away from DEI, major corporations moving away from it because it's not working. It's hurting investment. It's hurting profit. It's hurting profits. Do you think some of that stuff gives you optimism that we're turning the corner on it? We're almost sobering up after the pandemic?
I feel hopeful if there's a real collective awakening, especially on the left, the ones that are, I call them the left behind liberals, that are still really tied into their CNN. Their MSNBC and all that stuff. So as far as the woke ideologies go, I feel like they tipped the scales so far that we got so far off balance that things always have to swing back. But we're out of balance right now. We're really out of balance, especially with the lies in the society right now. There's no transparency. And my friends don't know what the hell's going on.
Right. And I think you're so smart not to pretend, not to depend on the entertainment industry, no matter how successful you are. Things can change in a flash. That's why you're rolling out. That's why you're rolling out. And you have rolled out Ultra Free, correct? To have some control of your life, some revenue coming in, separate from the entertainment and arts.
100%. And it was also a way for us to get out there and start speaking out about losing this country. And I don't think anyone realizes how under threat we are at the moment because everything seems so shiny, even though we're watching the pre-apocalypse before our
pre-apocalypse?
Eyes. I feel like that's what we're in right now. I don't know what's going to – I don't think that any one president is going to save this. It's going to take people to wake up along with them.
What, do you know – do you have a sense of what's behind it? Who's behind it?
I mean, I think most of the listeners here know that the deep state is deeply embedded in all of this. I mean, there's unelected officials all over New York City today. You know, with the whole UN, and they come from Davos to here and make their plans.
They're certainly targeting this mayor in New York City. Just about everybody who's been around had their phone taken, been investigated, been forced to resign.
Oh, really?
Yes. The Chancellor of Education yesterday.
Wow.
The NYPD commissioner last week, his brother the day before. It's crazy what's happening. Drea DiMatteo, great to see you. Congratulations on your Paroline Ultra Free. And hopefully we turn the corner.
I hope so. Can I just say one thing before I go? On Sunday in Washington, D.C., a bunch of amazing minds will gather, mostly liberals that have left their side and come to the middle, Republicans as well. Everybody's coming together for Rescue the Republic. And Kennedy will be speaking, Russell Brand, Matt Taibbi, Jordan Peterson, tons of amazing voices. And they'll be explaining why we're all coming together right now during this particular moment.
And by the way, a wise guy, David Chase, which premiered September 7th, is still at the documentary, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Congratulations. That's a great roster. Back in the room with Martha McCallum. Drea, thanks.
Right on, man. Thank you.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, if you're watching online right now, you see Martha McCallum worked her way back into the studio. Martha, I went a little long with Drea, which you understand because you just had her on a podcast, right?
Yesterday. She's really interesting. And, you know, we were just talking about the whole Make America Healthy Again issue, which
it's
I think
a bubbling
is really
up story.
Interesting. And I'm going to talk to RFK Jr. about it today because they were several of them were at this hearing with Ron Johnson. And you had Jillian on this morning.
Jillian Michaels,
who was also part of that hearing. I think this is an issue that really needs to get a lot of attention. So I'm happy to talk about it.
I think that if Trump wins, RFK's in there.
Yeah.
And you talk about creating, he's going to go in there and say, like, okay, I'm going to empower you. I don't know exactly where, but he'll be there.
Yeah. I think there would be some sort of, you know, some sort of group that is overseeing these issues and trying to encourage people to, you know, get chemicals out of their food. I find now that when I pick things up, I look at the back, and if there are more than five ingredients and I don't know what they are, I don't want to eat them anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I can't pronounce anything on the back of cans, on the back of food. Do you see that? I mean,
I think it's something that we should all be thinking about.
All right. And also, if you ever invite me over, I should know that you've looked at everything.
I have looked at the cans. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So I don't have to worry about it.
And
all I have to worry about is getting invited
and
over.
Room filters. I actually just got an air filter for our TV room because the dogs, I'm a little allergic to my own dogs. And
right.
So I did it for that reason. But she suggested that for everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
Martha McCallum, looking healthy, living and looking healthy every day.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I've been very clear. I think we should eliminate the filibuster for Roe and get us to the point where 51 votes would be what we need to actually put back in law the protections for reproductive freedom and for the ability of every person and every woman to make decisions about their own body and not have their government tell them what to do.
And that, of course, is the Vice President of the United States who wants to turn the page on herself, I guess, that she always talked about turning the page, not going back to the 4 years. One thing she brought up yesterday was definitive and made news. She is going to get rid of the filibuster if she gets in there. And she's under the impression that she only wants to get rid of the filibuster for one issue. How did that work last time when it came to judges? Martha McCallum still with us. Martha, what was the ramifications of that statement?
So it's interesting. Mitch McConnell just came out and, you know, sort of lambasted the idea of getting rid of the filibuster. But of course, you remember that Harry Reid, they, you know, agreed to get rid of the filibuster way back when it came to lower court judges. So this is an issue that will be a slippery slope. Of course, you can't just pass it for one issue. Then it's going to be something else that is so important that you have to go around
the
systems that were set up by the founding fathers in order to have a good check and balance system. So I think that she may also be thinking that she's unlikely to have a majority in the Senate and that she can say this now on the campaign trail and not necessarily be able to follow through with it.
Well, I think it really upsets people. I wonder how many moderates undecideds will say, I kind of like my institution's concern about his future and say, that's the type of thing I'm worried about.
Yep.
And I would add a couple of things. Manchin and Sinema are on their way out.
Right.
But a lot of people look at them as the voice of reason.
Yes.
Not as Republicans or Democrats, and both have become independents. And they said, not endorsing her now.
Right.
Wow. I thought that was a huge mistake from someone who's ridiculously careful.
I think that it's obviously something she feels very strongly about. I think she looks at the numbers and she thinks this is I need to get over the finish line with this group of people who are very upset about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And she's thinking perhaps that people keep looking for specifics. So here's a specific. And I think also with the knowledge that it's unlikely that she'd be able to do it.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things happening right now. Number one, I think the momentum's lost, but the race seems virtually tied. I know it's going to tell a different story if the voting was today. But judging by the polls, they're too consistently close to think it's not really close. Mm-hmm. But when asked whether she should come out and say specifically how she'd run the country, here's Jake Tapper and Nancy Pelosi, cut four.
Do you think she needs to be presenting more meat on the bones of, I get that she's from a middle-class family, it's great, and I get that she feels people's pains, great, but what about, like, here are the five things I'm going to do directly for you. Does she need to be doing more of that?
Well, she'll be doing some of that tomorrow once she'll put forth her economic plan. But people like to have a connection to whoever is running for office, that they share their experience, that they understand their lives, and I think that's what she is establishing. But I do think that the one issue in terms of the cost of living, people want to hear something very specific.
So what do you get from that? They're just trying to get across the finish line. She's never been impressed with Kamala Harris.
No, absolutely not. She was, from all we have seen in our reporting, she was on the team that wanted to see an open primary. She was worried that Harris might not be able to get them across the finish line. I think one of the most shocking stories in recent political history is the extraordinary rise in the polling for Kamala Harris. I mean, you know,
makes no sense.
But she has exceeded all of their expectations in terms of her ability. I also think that they were so depressed that the relief valve, you know, it's like when you release steam, it just goes flying to the sky, right? And I think that's a little bit of what we saw and have seen with Kamala Harris's approval ratings. I also think back to Nikki Haley saying, well, you know, whoever picks somebody under 80 is going to do very well in this contest. And I think that there was a lot of pushback to having the former and the current president running against each other again. So I think all of that are factors here. In terms of the specifics, I think there's only one set that she really needs to drill down on for people. And it is, how did you get from here to there? Which she has never been pressed on.
At least 10
and it's
issues.
Not likely to happen with Stephanie Ruhle, who she's going to sit down with. You know, it's when are we going to get the opportunity? And she should want to explain. Here's how I got from mandatory gun buyback. Oh, yeah, I'm for that. Fracking. Oh, absolutely. I'm against fracking. All of these positions that she had that she doesn't hold anymore. So, I mean, if you evolved in office once you saw things up close, great. Let's hear about that. Those are the big unanswered questions that she really needs to drill down on. And I think people understand that Democrats and Republicans have two different ways of fixing the economy. You know, Republicans, President Trump wants to lower regulations and cut taxes. You know, leave your money in your pocket so that you can decide what you want to do with it and how you want to spend it and help to stimulate business. Harris wants to give people, you know, breaks, right? $25,000 if you buy a house, $5,000 for your first child. Probably we haven't heard much about student loan forgiveness, but I'm guessing that would be back on the plate as well. The government gets bigger and bigger and bigger, spends more and more and more money in order to stimulate the economy. So those are the two options.
Yeah, nobody's talking at all about the deficit and how out of balance we are, although Elon Musk will be in, if Trump wins and Elon Musk taking a role in government efficiency would be fascinating.
The waste of money is so extraordinary. I mean, they spent billions that were supposed to have EV stations all across the country. They built 8.
I know.
This is the kind of thing that the private sector could do in a heartbeat.
By the way,
be in connection with the demand for such things, right? You have all of these car companies, Ford included, that had to basically give up the projects to build EV trucks because people weren't buying them. But the billions of dollars that the government has spent on these things is such an embarrassment and such a waste, and people don't like it.
You know, I think I mentioned to you that I just wanted this. I have a Jeep just to get around town, like the Jeep, but I can't stand the tops, flipping the tops. So I want to get a retractable roof. I have no place to put the top. I'm tired of rotating it out. I'm not handy. It's always a problem. So I just want a retractable roof. So I knew they were all over Florida. I go, I'm just going to get one in New York. So I took my 2015 Jeep. And I just wanted something like 2017 when they started rolling back. I must have called for 3 straight weeks. And know what they told me? All my Jeeps are electric. I'm having problems purchasing Jeeps to sell to people like me in New York because we're not a carbon state. I go, what is this carbon state?
Wow.
California too. But in Florida, they are literally everywhere. And I'm thinking to myself, do I have to get one in Florida and
right.
drive it 1,500 miles? So if you have one of those old-fashioned Jeeps, the CJ7s,
yeah.
so they run, they're like kind of a raw 1980s type look.
Yep.
They want no part of that in New York. If you want to get one of the parts to replace those rugged CJ7s, you got to go to a carbon state that is open to this
yeah.
and then ship it up. And then it's going to cost so much, you don't do it. So there is something going on, but they're just making life hard, getting people angry. Those dealerships will not stay in business if you keep forcing them to sell cars nobody wants.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, they have to let the market forces drive the demand. And the EV stations, I mean, these projects, what happens is they pass on Capitol Hill, they spend billions of dollars, and then they don't really follow through on any of it. And it just ends up sitting on the sidelines. I mean, the Inflation Reduction Act has billions of dollars that never got spent. So let's redirect it or just cut it out of the budget. No one ever talks about this. And it is, you know, it's a huge issue.
It is. And the one thing that I think that Joe Biden hurt Kamala Harris yesterday, if anyone was paying attention to him, and they might not have been, at that Bloomberg at the Plaza, he has that big meeting where he went over all the green stuff that he and Harris did together. Harris wants no part of talking about green energy. She knows how it polls.
No.
But isn't it different? In 2020, it wouldn't have been that bad. But in 2024, America's like, don't even start with me.
Right. Well, that's what happens when your economy goes through such a difficult time that people don't have the luxury of thinking about some of these things. They have to put food on the table. They have 2 jobs in most cases. Their wages have gone down in the last 4 years. So they don't want to hear about stuff that's going to cost them more money at this point.
So listen to her. This is what you can honestly put on her resume. In 2019, she co-sponsored the Zero Emissions Vehicle Act. In 2020, the vice president, 100% of new car sales are EV by 2035. She signed on to that. In 2021, as vice president announces electric car vehicle charging system, clean transportation, that was her initiative. Then she put in 2022, $370 billion invested in solar, wind, and electric vehicles. It doesn't matter. It's not her money. Announces new standards for electric vehicle charging network. Again, nothing's done. And then just now, this year, $900 million invested in clean school buses. $2 billion for auto workers. She does. Guess who makes the buses? China.
Yeah. So of course, it's hard to find vehicles that are built in the United States. It's hard. I think you can get a Toyota, right?
I think that's
built in America, but right. It's really hard.
Non-union?
Right. I mean, and I love, you know, 2035, think about that. 100% electric vehicles by 2035. That's about 10 years from now.
Right.
Can you imagine 10 years from now? We know how fast time goes. That every car on the highway is an electric vehicle? It's not going to happen.
And by the way, that means electric trucks too.
That's right.
So I was reading this New York Times Magazine story about they just followed an electric truck driver. And does that sound right? So for him to do this, to charge his truck,
he's got to
find a station. He's got to wait behind a Toyota Corolla and a Sentra. And he's got to detach his load. I don't know how to say it. I know for truckers are going to be mad at me. But he has to detach his cargo, go in with just his rig, I guess you would call it. And he's got to wait online with these tiny little cars. And it takes forever to charge. So not only that, the battery is so big, it takes up a lot of the space. And they don't want it too heavy because if it gets too weighed down, it's going to cost more power. So everything is bad
and
about
nobody
it.
Talks about what happens to these batteries after they're no good anymore.
No idea.
Where do they go, these enormous batteries in every car in America?
Well, the other thing is, if you want to commit to it, and no one's anti-electric, you have to commit to mining in our country. Minnesota, Nevada have to commit to mining. This guy, Governor Waltz, will not commit to mining in his state, but he wants all of us to have electric cars. But by the way, here's a guy they don't allow talking to the press at all.
No. No.
He used to be on a lot.
He's sort of a happy camper jumping around on stage. But he's going to have a debate on Tuesday with J.D. Vance. And I am really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Governor Waltz, who's a very good surrogate for Biden, up until the last minute, he would go on with the Sunday shows and say, how dare you think he's too old? What do you mean he's failing? This guy does it. And within 1 week, he not only out, but he's running with somebody else.
Right.
His vice president.
Who was also saying the same thing, by the way.
Right. And they said, by the way, that's a untold story that's going to be told at some point.
The cover up.
How many times he was in a meeting? We got one.
The cover up. Did you see him at the UN?
Terrible.
I mean, he was reading all off a prompter, having a very hard time getting through
anything.
You know, maybe three sentences in a row without getting caught on it. And it always feels like he's never read it because he's getting to the end of the sentence and then he realizes that there's another part to it.
I know.
And it's, I don't understand.
And he gets angry. With his foreign policy chronicled by the Wall Street Journal, Walter Russell Mead, it's indisputable. The worst foreign policy in our lifetime. Taiwan Strait, Southeast Asia, never been more dangerous. Love that he combined Australia and with South Korea and Japan and us. Good. But we have not done anything to collaborate and build the subs and ships necessary that we agreed on. Number two, the Middle East. Do I have to tell you? And when we look at what's happening in Eastern Europe, what's going on? He's still providing limits. He thought it was going to be a four-day war victory for Russia. Still didn't arm them. When the invasion didn't work, he slowly armed them. Almost everything he said he wouldn't do, he's done. And now he's saying, let me use your weapons without restrictions. This will be the latest challenge he has.
Yeah.
And by the way, and reports are General Keane was just on with me. He says, by all accounts, he's still making the decisions on foreign policy. They say he is absolutely doing it, that Blinken's for lifting restrictions. Jake Sullivan is not, and he is not. Zelensky's saying, I can't win if you don't let me hit the people that are bombing me. Are you kidding?
And he's saying that he has come to New York with a hope for getting to a place where they can start to negotiate an end to the war, that he wants to end the war, but that he feels like he needs the firepower to do it. It's very interesting to watch what's going on with Hezbollah and the Israelis right now, because the Israelis have been going after them in such an extraordinarily aggressive, powerful way, from the pagers to the missiles, taking out almost everyone below Nasrallah. I think there's maybe one or two guys left on the flowchart underneath Nasrallah at this point. And there are some indications this morning that they are open to perhaps having some kind of discussion. Now, is that because they're getting hammered so hard that they want to come to the table and have a discussion? So, you know, if you're Zelensky, I'm pointing over at Hezbollah and saying, see, that's how it works.
The editor of the Jerusalem Post on with us today, in his first story, he backed up. Obviously, he wouldn't have allowed it in. But the IDF is talking about a land invasion. They've already looked at the battalions, and they might go in. Can you believe this?
I know.
After what happened in 2006, which was tough, but they made progress there. But to go in on land into Lebanon, I mean, while still in Gaza, this is unbelievable. I mean, that would be tough.
You have to just think about the big picture. You know, basically, Russia and China and Iran want to weaken the United States, right? That's what this is. Everything we're talking about is all about Russia, China, and Iran wanting to weaken the United States. And they want to remove Israel from the map. That's the goal. And I think that, you know, the October 7th attack was as heinous as it was because they wanted to provoke an enormous response from Israel and then have people turn on Israel, which is exactly what has happened.
But I will say this. China and Russia never really had this type of adversarial opinion of Iran, Israel. That's something that's new because it was Netanyahu always going up to Russia.
But it works to the, you know, it's the group, right? So you have China and Russia and Iran, and you have the no limits partnership between China and Russia that they came out and talked about before the Olympics in Russia.
She's Martha McCallum. When you come back, if you're smart enough to stay with us, and I know you are, she will tell you what's on her show. If you don't, you'll never know.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
My Kamala Harris is not running for perfect. We have two choices. And so there are some things you might not know her answer to.
I don't think it's a lot to ask her to sit down for a real interview as opposed to a puff piece in which she describes like her feelings of growing up in Oakland with nice lawns.
Then I would just say to that, when you move to Nirvana, give me your real estate broker's number and I'll be your next door neighbor. We don't live there.
So Stephanie Ruhle, who'll be doing the interview with Kamala Harris, that's when she was on Bill Maher on Sunday, said, yeah, we don't know anything she's going to do, but she's not Donald Trump. That's essentially it. And that's how she got the
interview. There's agreement, Martha, in so many avenues of the media that is okay. You know, and it always takes me back to the text messages between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, where he says, don't worry, we won't let it happen.
Right. Yeah. Don't worry. Right? We have a plan.
It feels like that. It's like, oh, well, don't worry. We're not going to let it happen. We're not going to let her fall on her face. We're not going to let this happen because the alternative is reelecting him.
But Brett Stevens, who's a conservative who hates Trump, said, yeah, I'm not going to vote for Trump. So that's what I'm talking about. So she wasn't even debating a conservative.
I mean,
Bill Maher would probably do the better job pushing back.
That would be very interesting. Absolutely. No, but she won't ever do anything like that.
Who's on your show?
So we're going to talk to John Kirby. Obviously, this Israel situation is heating up. And you see the cover of the New York Post today, World on Fire, and the Walter Russell Mead piece, the destruction that has been left in the wake of the Biden administration. I mean, it's not a debatable issue about how many hotspots there are in the world right now at the end of his administration. So I'm going to talk to John Kirby about all of those things. We're also going to talk to Robert Kennedy Jr. about Make America Healthy Again. This is a huge issue. You and I talked about it at the top, and I'm going to speak with him about it today.
Well, that's going to be good. Are you going to have any bands, any singing or any dancing?
No cooking. No bands.
How could you have a show without
cooking? But I love your show. It's just a different show. That's
right.
All. But I love your show. I love cooking and bands.
No, I understand.
I like watching cooking.
Right.
I don't like actually doing it.
But you like to host a different show than that. Right. Wait, you don't cook at home at all?
Not really.
Really?
Do
okay.
You?
Not as long as it is Uber Eats.
Well, there you go.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.